Hey, Tom.
Hey, Jason.
You know what's great?
No.
Feels like pro wrestling is back, baby.
Is it?
Yeah, man. I'm finally, like, excited about pro wrestling again.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's a breath of fresh air has been introduced to us again, especially in the direction that we've been going in lately with WWE product. The door has been left open, and it looks like somebody's actually taking the ball and running with it.
Yeah. Not just a 24/7 title and running with it, but a ball.
Yeah, I don't know. I mixed my analogies. The door was open, and people are running with the ball. That's not how sports work.
I think that's a sport in, like, Sweden or something. Dorbalden is what they call it.
Dorpenhagen.
Ah, perfect. Before we go too into the racist against the Netherlands hole, let's talk about wrestling. What do you say?
Okay, it wasn't racist. It was just illiterate to language. I mean,
you forgot you're doing a show with me. It could have spiraled out of control easily.
Yes, that's a good point. Good point. Good save.
All right, buddy, let's do this. Ring the bell for me.
Sure enough.
You're listening to the Cheaters Never Pin Podcast, a proud part of the Section 328 Network, bringing you all the best in wrestling from WWE, New Japan, and beyond. Now, live from ringside, it's Mr. Workrate and JC.
Oh, buddies! It's the Cheaters Never Pin Podcast. My name is JC, and here next to me at the commentary table to the stars is my good buddy, Mr. Workrate, Tom.
Good to be here as always, JC.
We got to update that opening now.
Do we?
Yeah, I think so. Because we're barely talking about WWE this week. I mean, I guess you could talk about Best of the Super Juniors if you wanted to. I've caught none of it this year.
Yeah, we won't necessarily address it this week. Next week we might jump into it a little bit, but
The one promotion left off that list, AEW.
But that's the and beyond.
True.
Because what they say. It's like, you know, WWE, New Japan, and beyond.
I feel like...
So we didn't have to buy another opening.
It was $5, Tom. I feel like...
I'm all tight with money, okay? $5 is a lot of money, Tom, sometimes.
I feel like AEW's here, and they're not the beyond. I feel like the beyond is your ROH impact level promotion.
Yeah, and something below. We might talk about every once in a while.
Yeah.
Mexico.
AAA. Hey, by the way, in case no one knew this, and I knew this and then saw the Reddit thread, and I was like, I don't know that we've ever discussed this on the show. If you've never, and this is not an ad read, by the way. If you've never downloaded the app, which I think it's on a bunch of smart TVs and Roku, and you can get it on your phone and stuff like that. It's called Pluto TV. Has a ton.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's like a ton of free channels, and I have it downloaded on stuff because there's like a Mystery Science Theater channel that just runs Mystery Science Theater 3000 all day.
Yeah,
every day. It's perfect. There's one channel that does nothing but Gordon Ramsay shows, and they're all unedited, and it's amazing. They have two channels on there. One is 24/7 Impact.
Yeah.
And one is 24/7 AAA. So
I hadn't seen the AAA channel. Yeah. I saw the Impact channel.
That's a newer one. So if you need more wrestling.
Which was cool because, like, the one time that I was flipping through it, I found it was, like, an early episode. It was, like, from the early TNA pay-per-view, weekly pay-per-views.
Yeah. It's none of the more recent stuff. But, and I mean, it's like, but if you need free.
Well, I think they're cycling through everything. But
yeah. But if you need more wrestling, it's free and it's there. So just thought I'd throw that out there.
Yeah. There's also a channel that just. It's like the relaxation channel or something because it just shows like your point of view from a train.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like a train going through like the European countryside and it's got real soothing music. Like, so yeah. You need something to fall asleep to.
True.
I mean, yeah, Pluto TV is fun. It's just, I mean, and again, it doesn't cost anything. It's the commercials they stick in the middle of shows are
not
awkward just because a lot of times, yeah, it's just, just like somebody's in the middle of speaking and then suddenly there's a commercial and then it kind of goes back about 3 seconds and then plays through. But outside
free.
Of that, I mean,
it's free.
You get used to it.
Who cares?
It's free.
Yeah. So free wrestling. Go enjoy that, folks. But back on track, AEW, Double or Nothing, the first AEW show was this past Saturday night.
First, Jason?
Yes. All In was not an AEW show.
The first as AEW, yes. Okay.
Yeah. This is the first one, because, I mean, you know, All In was kind of the celebration of indie wrestling. And this is the first one, because, you know, not that, you know, they had minor storylines that they built up in BTE going into it and everything, but this is the first, you know, laying out a booking strategy for a national, international TV product, so...
Because this is what we had. I mean, AEW had nothing going into this outside of being the Elite and, you know, a couple of promos here and there. But yeah. They had no TV going into it. They had no real storyline, so to speak, outside of names. So, yeah, there was a few questions making you wonder what we were actually getting into. Because, you know, all these matchups look good on paper. But, well, I mean, there's got to be a little bit of story as well.
Right. I want to start off by talking about the show as a whole, production-wise, and this is probably the only like major negative I'll have. It's their first show. It was real rough. There were some bad camera angles, some bad camera cuts. All that will come with time. I don't know who's running the show from that perspective. I don't know that anyone knows who's running the show from that perspective. If it's someone from Turner or they've gone and hired somebody, but yeah, it was not great. There were some awkward moments there. I will say the commentary team, pretty good. I have high hopes for them. So is Excalibur, who Jim Cornette goes off on the Jim Cornette Experience Day complaining about, I don't know why Excalibur had to wear a mask. I don't know why he sounds like Meltzer either, but he does.
That's your non-Terry Funk voice.
Yeah. Patreon exclusive Terry
voice,
Funk.
I guess maybe.
Yeah. Terry Funk does. AEW commentary. Go to patreon.com. That would be the longest, like, 5 hours of my life. Excalibur was great.
For a two-hour show.
Right. Yeah, shut up. Excalibur was great in the lead role. JR did very well in kind of the color backup role to him. Those two have a great dynamic, and once they get their chemistry totally down, once they're used to working with each other, it's going to be amazing. The other guy, whose name I can't remember whatsoever, who was basically there just to do the "we're trending on Twitter" plugs and stuff, he was fine. But I enjoyed that. I know JR was an X factor going into this.
Yeah, he was a little bit of a concern for me because, I mean, like other people, I had listened to some of the work that he had done on Access TV for the New Japan stuff, and it was cringy at best because he didn't seem to have the interest necessarily in learning who these people were or what was going on. And between him and Josh Barnett, I guess.
Yeah.
They were just not good.
No,
yeah, especially when you compared it to actual like New Japan English commentary team, Kevin Kelly and Chris Charlton and Rocky Romero and whoever happened to be, you know, with Kevin Kelly at the time, just night and day. So, I mean,
them bringing
JR is a little bit up there, and I mean he's got the history and everything like that, but it's like, well, You're allowed to lose a step and
right. Yeah.
You know, is he going to have the interest? Is he going to learn who all these guys are? I mean, he obviously knows who Cody is, but is he going to bother to learn who all these, you know, other wrestlers, these indie guys are, mm-hmm. and be able to keep up with everything in this completely new style that, you know, I mean, not new style, but well, new style in general, how, like, wrestling now in 2019 is a hell of a lot different than it was in 1999.
Yeah. So. I think, you know, everyone wants JR to be JR, and they romanticize JR in the Attitude Era, which was when he was at his peak. And I think he adapted. I think taking him off that lead role and kind of moving him to that, I'm going to give you the in-depth and the heart and soul of the match, is perfectly where he needs to be for him now. And it's still JR, but in that role, you don't have to rely on him as much for calling all these new moves and who the wrestlers are as much, right? So I think it works. I think it's perfect.
Yeah, I think it's ideal because now it's the type of role he would be in now. He's the experienced person. He's the one that's, you know, kind of just that you would turn to and go, hey, JR, you know, look at these two guys go. And he can go, oh, yeah, this reminds me of, you know, back in the 70s when this and that. Yeah, and that's the ideal angle for him, basically, where, like you said, he doesn't have to know the name of every single lucha / indie move, and that's fine.
Yeah,
and it's a good position for him, and I'm glad it's working out, and hopefully, I'm sure they're paying him enough to be in this role, but I'm glad it's working out for everybody.
Yeah, JR is not the kind that's going to work for free. Or for a reduced rate, even. he's the very old school in that sense.
Yeah.
So let me see if I can get this to play here. Let's see if we can make this happen without any hiccups. This right here, his top moment of the night.
Easily. I said I demand a thank you.
Jericho's cutting his promo. This will lead us into the next part of our discussion here.
Okay.
That's right. The Mox. I just want to play that because we were talking about JR so much. And that in that moment, that hey, 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 what the hell? Good God Almighty, the roof just blew off. It felt so important and real. And JR nailed it. And I was so thrilled when that happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It gave me the warm and fuzzies.
I got the
going back to the late 90s.
I'm doing the rock up on the stage, you know, showing off my goosebumps. Like, I still get it, like, just listening to it then. Because I honestly didn't think, when we got to that point in the night, I didn't expect Jon Moxley anymore. Once I saw he wasn't in the Casino Battle Royal.
Show.
Yeah. Once I saw he wasn't in the Casino Battle Royal, I was like, all right, he's not there yet. Maybe we'll get there. And then as soon as you see him run through the crowd here, I was like, that's right, he lives in Vegas. It's like, I forgot about that part. So Jon Moxley made his debut, attacking Jericho, and then completely decimating Kenny Omega.
And a referee. He took out a ref, too.
He did. It was not Earl Hebner. How great was it to see Earl Hebner in a ring? I know he's been in Impact, but, you know, whatever. It's the Heb. Now if they could just get Brian. I feel like you can't have one without the other.
Don't
want.
No, I thought they signed his son, right?
The referees on this show were Aubrey Edwards, Bryce Remsburg, Earl Hebner, Paul Turner, and senior official Rick Knox. Doing this match, I think. No, it was Turner. That's right. Turner's the senior official. I'm sorry.
I thought I had seen somewhere when I was looking at the roster that there was another Hebner sign.
Maybe they did sign him, and he just wasn't on the show yet.
Yeah, it's very possible.
Yeah.
Women's roster referees.
So let's talk about Jon Moxley being in AEW. Let's talk about how happy he looked to be there. How, like, his whole demeanor was so different. And part of that is this is obviously a different character than Dean Ambrose.
Right.
I think it's the same guy at the core. But it just he just felt unleashed, right?
Yeah, it's and we'll eventually get to the Jericho podcast in a minute or so, but
first we got to talk about Omaha Steaks. Father's Day, I'm sorry.
No. You need to do the complete transition. Like, we'll get to your comment in a second. However, Father's Day is coming up.
But it's got to be with different...
Why don't we have...
It's got to be with different ambient noise in the background. That's the thing. That's the key.
I need you to get on the horn and get us at least 8 sponsors for next week.
Yeah.
I want us to break every single conversation up with the most obscure... Yeah, it doesn't have to be one of those cool things like bedding or...
Tom, we've been doing this
1-800 flowers or something like that.
We've been doing this like 2.5 years and none of the dick pills have even come at us yet, okay? Like, we can't even get Blue Chew up in this. But I do want some free steak.
I was on a...
I can use one of two things, steak or dick pills. I'll let you figure out which on your own.
So I was on Reddit and they were talking about the Omaha steak things, and they're like, but nothing beats this ad read, and it was Stone Cold on his podcast.
Oh, is it the CougarLife.com read that he did that time?
Absolutely.
If you just go to YouTube, type in Stone Cold Cougar Life, and I'm sure it'll come up. Oh, it's brilliant.
I mean, he did it so well too. I mean, you know, you could see somebody like having to read that go, oh God. Nah, man, I was 100% gusto.
God damn, you got to get some of these cougars up in your life. I don't do a great Stone Cold, but you get the gist of it.
Come on, you dumb son of a bitch. Don't you want to be with a MILF?
All right, gang, y'all all know how much I love to hunt. Well, dig this. I just heard about a dating website where the women hunt you. Yeah, that's right. It's called CougarLife.com. So, who are the women on CougarLife.com,
who
you
are
ask?
They, Steve?
I will tell you. They're divorcees that are desperate to date. Single moms who are tired of sitting at home. Ho-ho. And single women in their sexual prime. The one thing they all have in common is they're all prowling CougarLife.com looking for a hot young stud. So if you're tired of playing games with girls at the bar, join CougarLife.com for free. That's right.
I'm going to cut it off there.
Sexual prime. Which is the best Transformer, by the way.
So I'm not familiar with that part of the Transformers canon.
No, it was later after, you know, most of them died in the movie.
Oh.
They had to bring back some newer ones.
That's what I call a GoBot. All right, back to wrestling.
Yeah, it didn't work.
Moxley. Moxley, thank you. I was like, I don't even know where we were that led to that tangent.
John Moxley ends up on the Talk is Jericho podcast.
That's right. Which, that's what it was.
I really hadn't listened to Jericho's podcast at all, and I ended up downloading this one because I've been traveling a lot for work, so I've been looking for podcasts to listen to, and God, I don't want to listen to this one.
We'll get back to that comment, but if you're traveling, you can go to audibletrial.com. No, sorry. Let's try it again.
Roll with it, man. Yeah, I don't
care. I haven't done that read in a month, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Moxley.
There goes all that money.
Ooh, yeah, I tell you.
But I downloaded that podcast and the one before that, which was him and Jericho and Meltzer talking about Owen Hart, which, you know, made my heart hurt. Pretty much listening to that, because not necessarily the tragic aspect around it, but just half of them talking about where Owen might be now. I mean, not necessarily now, but like in the 2000s, had he lived, like, because Jericho was saying, like, pretty much one of the main reasons that he was going to WWF was the ability to be able to work with Owen Hart. Because he was somebody that he was pumped to see and just watched him, you know, going up through the Stampede ranks and that type of thing and just being excited for that, and how it looked like Owen was kind of getting frustrated with how things were going with him and how he was kind of floundering a little bit around that time and getting stuck with the Blue Blazer gimmick and that type of thing. And how potentially bringing over not only Jericho, who was eventually coming over, but Malenko, Guerrero, and the Radical guys coming over, like, you know, something like 6 months later or something like that, would have totally revitalized Owen's career. And I'm like,
yeah.
Damn, we missed out on that. But I will make a connection here to that particular podcast later. But listening to Moxley or Dean Ambrose or whatever you want to call him on that Jericho podcast, there was a lot of catharsis in that.
Yeah.
I heard
Jericho on Busted Open this morning, and he was talking about, you know, he goes, that was a really easy one to do because, you know, Dean said, you know, I got a lot I want to say. So I drove to his house and I put the recorder down and I said, hey, here's John Moxley. And then 2 hours later I went, okay, thanks for listening.
Yeah, there was almost, and it was funny because, like I said, I've listened to two podcasts, the Owen one and that one, and I listened to the Moxley one first, and I'm like, wow, Jericho does nothing on his podcast except do ad reads. And it's funny because that was the breakup, is like they found one opportunity where Moxley goes to breathe for a second, and that's when Jericho jumps in and uses his opportunity to talk about Omaha Steaks or whatever it happened to be that time. But man, he was just going. I mean, like I said, it's catharsis. He just unloaded and man can tell a story. I mean, he's a good storyteller, but just you could tell that even he was holding back some. Because he doesn't want to completely bury the promo. And he said that to start off with. He's like, I'm not trying to completely bury WWE. I appreciate all my time there. I spent 8 years there. I'm thankful for my time there. And, you know, my wife still works there. Because one of the things that they talked about was how, oh, you know, we're surprised you didn't walk out, you didn't quit, something like that. They're like, no, I don't want to potentially quit and, you know, burn all my bridges. And they turn around and sell a Shield DVD in Cambodia like 8 years from now. I want my check for 26 cents. He wants to make sure he's still in his good graces. From that standpoint, at least.
He talks to about, you know, his wife, Renee, is still there. And he doesn't want to make things... because, if there's one place that's going to bury someone's significant other, it's WWE. It's Vince. I think he'd be hard-pressed to do it to a woman in this day and age. But it's possible.
Well, the thing is, too... it's a little bit more difficult to quote unquote bury someone like Renee. I mean, you can take her off TV. I don't think they're going to suddenly start putting her in angles and making her like be part of the Kiss My Ass Club or something like that. This isn't that particular time.
You can have her get kidnapped and fall in love with Lars.
Yeah, that could happen.
That's good shit. That's you.
So, yeah, there's a couple of points in there that just scream Vince. And one of the things that Moxley talks about was just Vince seemed to be in love with goofball Dean Ambrose.
Right.
I should say. There's no goofball Moxley. Goofball Dean Ambrose that, like, especially when he was a face, just how he would just randomly do completely stupid crap. And there would be these things that would be written into the script and Vince would love them. And like Ambrose would go into Vince's office and be like, yeah, I don't know about this line. And Vince would be like, what are you talking about? This is you.
Yeah.
You're wacky.
I mean, it's definitely something we already knew, right? Like Vince exerting what he thinks is, you know, Vince. It's Vince producing WWE for Vince.
Yeah. It's already been said that Vince loves, like, dick and fart jokes.
Well, yeah, clearly.
And how has Jim Carrey not appeared on a WWE show?
Oh, wow. You're right.
Because, man, I mean, if ever there was somebody that was meant for Vince McMahon, like you know, he's seen The Mask like 800,000 times.
Oh, God. And Ace Ventura. Vince loves the talking butt bit.
Yes.
Yeah, it's clear Dean was very frustrated. Right? He talks about, I guess, the promo he had to cut where he gets the immunization from the doctor backstage while he was heel. Kind of being the moment where he knew, like, I'm done. This is 100% over. There's no chance of me coming back.
And they kept going at it too, like that. This is a promotion that can't do a slow build for the life of it, but apparently they were doing like an 8-week build of Dean Ambrose getting further and further immunizations and gas masks and face masks each week. Like, the mask would get bigger, like he'd have the surgical mask 1 week and then he'd have like a gas mask next week, and then he'd have like a hazmat suit the following week. Yeah.
You forgot where he came out with the security guards too, to protect him.
Yes.
It made me really sad listening to it, honestly. Because, like, you think about everything these guys have to go through being on the road 300 days a year, and this is, you know, for the vast, vast majority of them, this is what they've always wanted to do. And here they are on what is the biggest stage in the industry. And it's not what they perceive it should be. They don't have the creative freedom and the ability to exercise everything they've trained and learned how to do on the biggest stage of them all and really show that off. And it just makes me so sad and frustrated for all of them.
Yeah.
And I get that at a level like WWE, there has to be way more kind of clamped down control of creative and everything, because, you know, it's a global publicly traded company that has, you know, a responsibility to sponsors and stockholders. And, you know, it's not going to be the edgy hip product ever, right? Because, you know, that's just not their niche. They're going to appeal to the biggest audience possible, because that's right. How you make $1 billion a year. But I think within that, you can still let these guys do that, and you give them the framework and tell them, you know, here's what we're going for, make it work within this. Someone like Dean absolutely could. Someone like Paul Heyman makes it work. You know,
right?
So it just like, if they could just unleash that entire roster, like, we wouldn't even be talking about AEW. It would be,
and I mean,
WWE would, not that they're not the juggernaut now, right? WWE is not going to die. They're in no trouble.
Right.
They have every bit of money they could ever need, and it will keep flowing in. But, oh, God, they would be, I mean, they would be the most unstoppable entertainment force in the world.
And Moxley himself even said that. I mean, even when he was building up AEW and talking about how excited he was to kind of be working with that, he was saying, you know, WWE is always going to be there. And it is. I mean, mm-hmm. Unless something completely bizarre happens, which,
right,
you know, completely, like, destroys the company for some reason. You know, as long as there's wrestling, there's going to be WWE.
Yep.
At least in some form. I mean, eventually, you know, it might get to the point where once Vince dies and if other issues take place, you know, if it completely ends up getting destroyed in one way or another, it's going to take like decades. It's not like something that's like 5 years from now. Oh, what was WWE? No, it's, I mean, even if they went into a WCW like tailspin, they could still maintain that for like the next like 10 years and still be fine.
Yeah. I don't know. I just hate it for the I hate it for the talent. It's just ugh. But
and listen, it's
go ahead.
I was gonna say it, and it circles back to the Owen Hart thing, in which it's you know, there was a lot more off the cuff in the Attitude Era than there was, you know, than there is now. Obviously, Vince has everything so locked down now, but when you have these characters that you did back in the Attitude Era, it was still getting written. You know, you still had promos that were being written for you, and you know, you had some people that had a little bit more leeway in that type of thing, but gimmicks and things like that were kind of being drawn together and given to people. And that was the thing with Owen, was they didn't know what to do with him, so they just decided, you know, let's screw around, or let's, you know, let's do something that I find silly, but you know, like 85% of the crowd's not going to give a crap about, but you know, it's a rib on Sting, it's that type of thing. It's that lack of creativity that leads you to doing stupid stuff that, well, in Owen's case, killed him. But in the case now, it's letting wrestlers get incredibly frustrated and letting somebody like a Dean Ambrose not even look at the contract that he was sent to potentially extend his WWE career.
Yeah.
And just leave and get to the point where he didn't care where he went. He didn't care how much money he was getting paid at one location. You know, if he was going to do, because he was asked too, he goes, well, you know, people are like, oh, well, it was just assumed that when AEW came out, you were going to go there. And he's like, well, you know, I had made the decision before then. I was going to go to CZW, or I was going to go to, you know, Japan or something like that, which kind of blows my mind to think here's Dean Ambrose going back to CZW.
Right.
Like, okay, now you're going back to doing like, you know, $250 shows and busting your head open and going through light tubes because that's what you enjoy doing.
Right. Hey, but WWE only paid him $5 for the Shield special, so.
$50.
$500.
$50. No, it was
$500.
It was $500, yeah.
For that last show, they paid him $500.
What an extra gets paid.
For a network special, he got $500. Ugh. I will say, the one thing, and I knew he's never going to say it, and it's probably never going to come out, but Mox does go into the whole part about, you know, when he was feuding with Seth right after Roman went out with leukemia, that, you know, he hated the whole fact that he had to bring that up. But there was one point, there was a line he refused to say because he knew it would cost sponsors and it caused problems for the company. I want to know what that line was.
Yeah.
And I want to know who was responsible for it. And I know who was responsible for it. But I still want someone to say who was responsible. I want to hear it out loud.
Right.
We talked about how kind of skeevy that was anyway. We've, you know, ad nauseum. But, ugh, made me so mad.
And you know that it's not something that Dean or some, I mean, it's one thing to be like, say, an introductory wrestler, a guy who's been with WWE for like 6 months or something like that, and is like, oh crap, if I don't say this, I'm gonna get fired, you know, and be in that position. It's not that, and you end up having somebody like his best, you know, one of his best friends have to say that stuff for quote unquote the business.
Yeah.
It's just, to be put in that position is just,
it's gross.
Yeah.
Yeah. But definitely go listen to this podcast if you haven't. It's very eye-opening about the WWE creative process, or lack thereof. I don't know. I feel like I learned a lot. And like I said, it just kind of made me like, this sucks. And then, of course, Meltzer today publishes a story. Wow, lots of people are unhappy backstage. Like, come on. Yeah. Many people are frustrated. Okay.
Oh, hell, I could have broke that news.
Yeah. Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it, buddy. At the same time, this is the other thing I want to bitch about since I'm on a Meltzer rant right now. I don't know if he wrote it in the newsletter or tweeted it. I can't remember off the top of my head. But he was talking about, you know, WWE fans are going to be mad because of the way we're doing things in reference to AEW. And like, Dave, if you're a freaking journalist, stop that. You do not work for them. You are not on their payroll. You cannot have that bias. Dave, stop. I know you call yourself a journalist. Can you act like it for once in your career? Stop calling women fat and start reporting the news. Anyway.
Yeah, he's been buddy-buddy with the Bucks for a while. Yeah.
Everybody knows that, right? But...
And Meltzer and Alvarez are always going to get those first interviews and, you know, all the inside scoops as to what AEW is doing next and who they're potentially signing and that type of thing. But
yeah.
But you don't work for them, buddy.
Yeah. Comment. So let's talk about Double or Nothing for a minute. I guess the other big surprising debut, one Awesome Kong turns the triple threat for the women into a fatal four way. That was really cool.
Welfare queen.
I know. I think I was kind of running through what was happening. I was telling my mom about it. And she was like, yeah, an Awesome Kong. She goes, who's that? I was like, yeah, you know, the Welfare Queen from GLOW. Like, she wrestled at Impact for years. She was in a Royal Rumble. I was like, really? I was like, yeah. She's like, that's cool.
And my kids always made jokes about Karma, like, because she was in one of the WWE video games.
Yeah, because she showed up in the Royal Rumble one year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wasn't that the only...
And that was it. She showed up in the Royal Rumble, and that was it.
Yeah. She's one person I wish would be great in WWE, but they would mess it up.
I don't know how much she's... she's doing the acting thing. I think not just GLOW, but doing other stuff as well.
And... Yeah, I think she's training too.
So,
other highlights of the night. Oh, another unexpected debut in AEW. I don't know if you call it a debut. But holy crap, Bret Hart showed up to present the championship title belt. Which, when whoever the British comedian that was doing that introduction did, when he started the best there is, the best there, you heard the crowd like start getting really excited, but also like, nah, you lying.
You're just trying to spin this, and it's going to be heel coming out.
It's going to be MJF.
But which it eventually was.
Yes, but it was Bret Hart. That was crazy. I didn't expect that. I don't think anybody did. I wonder.
Bret does what Bret does.
Like, he has a very hot and cold relationship with the E for lots of reasons. But, like, he's on a Legends deal because he's a 2-time Hall of Famer, right? My assumption is he's on a Legends deal. They sell his merch.
I don't know how Legend deals work.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, my understanding of Legend deals were pretty much so Vince could feel a little bit better about himself by taking the guys from back in the day who he gave like no medical benefits or anything like that to, who are going to have medical problems, and put them under a contract so that they have a little bit of income and can pay their hospital bills and all that type of thing, potentially.
In exchange,
I don't know.
In exchange for, we're going to use your likeness on some merch and make some money off that.
Yeah. And I don't know if actual health insurance or something like that kind of comes from one of those things.
I assume it's not. But
yeah.
So he presents the belt, is interrupted by MJF, who is maybe the best heel in wrestling today, in this current moment. It's either him or Orange Cassidy. I don't know who.
We'll get back to that.
Get back to what?
Orange Cassidy.
Do you have thoughts on Orange Cassidy?
I love him.
Okay, good. We're on the same page. It's just so great.
I had to show my kids, like, the entrance into the destruction he did to Tommy Dreamer.
Oh, yeah. He's great. But MJF comes down, makes fun of Brett for being attacked at the Hall of Fame.
Oh, look, a fan.
But then proceeds to get beat up on by Jimmy Havoc, Jungle Boy, and Adam Page. Which is fine. It's the first show. Beat up on some heels. Who cares? I saw people online having issues with that. I'm like, whatever.
Whatever.
This is a happy moment. So, let's see what else. The Casino Battle Royale was on the pre-show. I want to talk about the format of it and how I absolutely did not like it and never wish to see this again.
They wanted to do something a little bit different.
They did. And I applaud them for taking a risk on it, right? I'm cool with you trying to do that. It didn't work.
Yeah. So to quickly explain, instead of it being a Royal Rumble kind of thing where, you know, you start off with two and then as a period of time goes, another wrestler comes down, another wrestler comes on. They did it in groups of five.
Mm-hmm. Determined by the suits of cards that they drew.
Yeah. So you basically had four groups of five that came out in particular intervals. So there was one group of five that started the match, and then group of five, group of five, group of five. And then the 21st wrestler who ended up being
the Joker, Adam Page.
Yeah.
The horse. What was the joke MJF made about him? Called him the horse. Not the horse doctor. Shit, what was it? I tweeted it. It was really funny. It's an interesting. It was an interesting concept, but I don't know. Because you've just got five people running in at a time, and it felt way more chaotic than it needed to be. And no one really stands out when that happens.
I like the fact that there was some confusion that Orange Cassidy was called the 22nd wrestler. When right. In fact, he was part of one of the groups of five, but he so casually walked to ringside
yeah.
that they thought it was a separate entrance.
Yep. Yeah. Luchasaurus being the big standout in this match, I think.
Yeah.
Who is now signed. He is now All Elite. It's exciting. Really hoping he is the mystery man in the, I guess, is it the Fighter Fest match that's it's Cody and the Bucks versus the Lucha Brothers and a mystery opponent? Or is that Fight for the Fallen? No, it's definitely Fighter Fest because Cody's got another tag match at Fight for the Fallen, which we'll get to. Yeah, I just want to talk about that format, how it just kind of went, cool idea, didn't work. Let's talk about Cody and Dustin.
Okay.
Tom, how much did you love this match?
It brought me back, man. And the thing I have to, you know, gloat about, I called it.
Yeah, you did.
Dustin loves the blade. He really does.
Even though he apparently forgot how to do it.
Yeah, well, you know, that much time in the E will
affect your memory. I saw either a tweet or on Reddit from some random person that was like, that's at least a 0.8 on the Muda scale.
Yeah.
Dustin had some color, y'all.
But it was a little less than Muda. It was a little less than Eddie JBL, but it wasn't that much less.
No, it was. That's what it reminded me of the minute it happened. I was like, oh no. I was like, I'm actually genuinely concerned if he can finish this match with this much blood loss.
Like, that much blood loss for a 50-year-old.
I was like, he's going to pass out. Like, because there were legitimately pools of blood in the ring.
Yeah, there were some shots that, like, I remember seeing it because I wasn't watching it live, but I was looking at GIFs, and there was a couple, and it was just, like you said, there was just a pool next to his head. Yeah. It's like, ooh.
Cody is covered in blood. Hebner is covered in blood. Please have the refs wear gloves when people get busted open. Just, that was one thing that I went, you know, in every real combat sport, they wear gloves. Can we please do that here? This match, it just, like, you know, we talked about, there wasn't, you know, not any real build, right? They each cut a couple promos leading up to it. But it's such a simple story. It's brother versus brother. Who's the best? You got Dustin claiming, you know, he was Dusty's favorite and this and that. It's simple build. They go in there. It is literally a blood feud in every conceivable way. They beat the hell out of each other. Have the match of the night. I don't think anyone would disagree with that, right?
Nope.
And it just felt right. And especially to see Dustin at that age still just go. Like, I love it.
So here's the thing. I mean, we talk about, like, say, New Japan and how they can tell, you know, you tell a story with a match. And New Japan has built stories, I mean, to the point where a lot of times you can watch a match in New Japan, don't need necessarily commentary, but you understand and you get the drama of the two competitors fighting because of the story that they tell in the ring.
Yeah.
And that was absolutely the case with Cody and Dustin. Like,
100%.
They told the story in the ring, and it's something you haven't seen in American wrestling in way too long.
Yeah. That was, I don't know if it was John Pollock I heard say this, or I heard it on Busted Open on Monday morning. I have no idea. I can't remember. But someone was talking about, you know, this show was so great because you had so many different styles of wrestling, right? You've got the Joshi match. You've got the crazy spot fest tag team match with the Bucks and the Lucha Bros. You've got, you know, great women's wrestling. You've got the Shima and all the folks from China doing that new style. And then here with Cody and Dustin, you have your traditional American wrestling match. And I think that's why it felt so good, because it felt fresh within the context of the show as a whole. Like, it didn't feel like here's another one of these, which WWE feels like a lot, right? And Impact, and they're all guilty of it. I loved it. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. Go find it on Bleacher Report Live or Fight or wherever, and watch it and pay for it. Hopefully it's not $60 anymore. I still think that was too expensive.
And I mean, the emotion of the match, I mean, like, the two of them, you know, crying at the end. I mean, you could say whatever and kayfabe and all that type of thing. I think there was true emotion there that they knew the match they had pulled off. And Dustin knows that he's wrapping up his career.
Yeah. Well, his Tron, you know, said last run.
Yeah.
So, and of course, you know, the crowd, everyone kind of assumed this may be Dustin's retirement match. And it would have been, it almost was. But Cody then says, you know, I signed a contract for Fight for the Fallen for a tag team match with a partner of my choosing. But right now, I don't need a tag team partner. I don't need a friend. I need my older brother. And suddenly 20,000 neckbeards started weeping in Las Vegas.
It got a little Dustin in there.
Yeah, I see what you did there. We could
I just came up with that now.
I like that. It was pretty good. We could keep talking about this show, but we probably need to move on. I'm very excited for the future of AEW. Because, you've got Moxley Omega set up. You've got Paige Jericho set up. You've got the Young Bucks and the Lucha Bros still feuding. You've got anything, you set up all these potential feuds with MJF, which he could feud with anyone because everyone hates him because he's MJF. The one thing I'm most excited for, and I don't want to say hatred or disdain, it may be too strong, but my not love of deathmatch wrestling is well documented on this program. But the fact that there could be a Jimmy Havoc, John Moxley match.
Yeah.
It's going to be a work of art. It's going to be a gory, bloody mess. But I'm here for it.
And part of me doesn't know how to react to that.
I know, but I want it.
Because I've gotten, I hate CZW. And I'm not a deathmatch fan. Every once in a while, it's like, it's interesting every once in a while.
Right.
Like once a year or something like that.
Yeah. I don't mind whenever GCW is doing a show at Mania weekend and I see one deathmatch. I'm like, cool. My quota is now met.
But, I've gotten used to this Dean Ambrose sanitized version of Moxley. So to see potentially the CZW version of him rear its ugly head again, part of me is intrigued, part of me is concerned. I don't know, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yes. Very excited for Moxley versus the King of the Goths. Hell yeah. Give me that. Put it in my vein. Let's talk about the only bright spot in WWE right now. Because we're on SmackDown, we're pretty, yet again, meh. Let's talk about this Saturday night. TakeOver 25. Which, holy crap, there's been 25
TakeOver
of these.
TakeOver XXV.
TakeOver XXV. From hot Bridgeport, Connecticut. Because, cool. They couldn't just, when they want to randomly book a takeover, be like, Raleigh, North Carolina. Nope. Dorton Arena. Nope. Now, I keep trying to advocate for this. I want NXT in Dorton Arena. How great would that be?
It would be fun. It would look ugly as hell on a pay-per-view.
But I feel like Hunter would love it.
Oh, Hunter would do it in a second.
Right?
And see, that's the type of stuff that if you really want to get into this expanded WWE network, you just do a Dorton Arena WWE network special.
Oh, God, yeah. Talk slower.
And you just throw the old overlays and everything like that and just make it, look like 86.
Oh, yes. Do it. Do it. Did you see, speaking of like the 80s, Progress did their entire show this past weekend like it was 1989, I think. Like they changed all the rest. Like it was a gimmick show. The entire show is kind of out of canon. But that was really neat.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Something fun. I'm watching Starrcade 86 in the background.
There you go. You should be watching Starrcade 2018, right? Seven? I don't know when the last one was. They brand that show every year now. So, again, the fact that they're doing Starrcade every year and it's not in Charlotte or Atlanta, I do not understand.
Like, you do not understand what this word means.
Yeah.
And again,
it's not in Charlotte, it's not in Atlanta, it's not in Raleigh, it's not in Greensboro, it's not in Winston.
Greensboro. See, your first choice is Greensboro.
Yeah.
Because that's where it always was.
Right.
And then outside of that, you either do it in the Omni or you do it in Charlotte.
For all the times I've ever walked in the tunnels and underground, like in the Greensboro Coliseum, like as a wrestling fan, it just like you can feel it in that building all the time. You can still feel like the echoes I don't know. It was a weird. It was me having a weird like moment.
I have never been,
like, at all to Greensboro Coliseum.
Nope.
It's not a great building. I'm gonna be 100% honest. I hate that Coliseum. It's a crap hole. It makes PNC look like Barclays, like amenity wise.
That's not a compliment.
No. But yeah, man, it just there's yeah, as a wrestling fan, like walking through the tunnels and everything. I don't know. Anyway, I could go on and on about that.
But I mean, that's the thing. That's tradition. I mean, that's why we want something in Dorton Arena. You know, it's not because Dorton's a real nice facility with a lot of like updated amenities or anything like that.
No, it would suck. It would be the worst place ever to sit for 4 hours and watch a show. But I would enjoy every minute of it.
I mean, the last event I watched there was roller derby.
Yikes! Do you remember that roller derby show that used to come on? I think it was on TNN, right? Because it came on right before or after ECW.
Was that the reboot of Roller Games?
I think so.
Because I remember the original Roller Games in the 80s, yeah. The late 80s.
Yeah, I think it, yeah.
Because they would do the roller game events, and then like at halftime they would have whatever hair band was available to do like a live concert type thing. I remember Warren did it 1 week, and I was just like, oh, awesome, it's Warren.
Everyone just learned much about you.
Yeah. I am a Warren fan. I mean, so much now.
I don't even know who
Janie Lane's dead, but... Oh, come on.
I don't. What? Tell me a song that I would know from them.
Cherry Pie.
Okay. All right. Cool.
Yeah. It's their worst song, but...
You would say that. What's your favorite? What's your favorite Warrant deep cut, Tom? B-side.
Oh, I wouldn't call them deep cuts necessarily. Blind Faith is a good song. I Saw Red's a good song.
All right, I'm gonna.
Sometimes She Cries.
All right, Takeover is Saturday Night. I feel like we're just gonna
brought
keep
to you by Warrant. And Amazon Music.
Wouldn't it be great instead of
an Amazon Music read?
No, we don't. But you could. I think if you sign up using our link at cheatersneverpen.com, clicking the Buy on Amazon button, and signing up for Amazon Music Unlimited that way, I'm pretty sure we still get a cut. So do that. And then you too can go, Alexa, play Warrant.
I'm waiting to see if it picks it up.
Yeah, she did.
Uncle Tom's Cabin, all right.
There you go. Alexa, stop before we use up all our fair use for the day.
Uncle Tom's Cabin, excellent song.
Cool.
That's probably the best song off of the Cherry Pie album.
All right. Good to know. Takeover's of... let's get back... try this again.
It's only 5 matches. Come on, we can do this.
I know. Matt Riddle takes on Roderick Strong. Cool.
Yeah.
It'll be good. I enjoy watching Matt Riddle work. I enjoy watching Roderick Strong work. And of course, he's, you know, slowly turning on Undisputed Era.
Yeah.
Which I enjoy. Slow burn. NXT can slow book.
Yes.
Sometimes way too long. But they can.
And again, it's the weird thing about you bring people into NXT developmental. You originally had Dusty, and now there's obviously other people doing it, basically teaching how to do promo. And then they call you up to WWE where you're never allowed to do a promo.
Right? Exactly.
That was one of the things that Moxley was talking about. Like, he's like, you're writing a script for me. You don't want a wrestler. You want an actor.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, hire an actor. They're going to be better than me.
We make movies.
We make entertainment.
Yeah. In the match that both men claim will steal the show, Velveteen Dream defends the NXT North American Championship against new NXT roster member, as confirmed by Triple H on the media call today, Tyler Breeze. Very happy for Tyler to go back, because at least he's going to be utilized, because he's incredibly talented.
I was going to say, that was my thing. It's like, you know, people could look at that and go, oh man, sorry. Like, no, you're building your brand again. And when your contract runs out, and if you elect to leave, you can build directly on that.
Yeah, you went out on top. Because you're in NXT. This is the gimmick versus gimmick match. But it's going to be so good. Because both these guys can work their ass off.
Yeah.
And I fully believe when they say it's going to steal the show, it will. Without a doubt.
Because they both have similar types of gimmicks that will immediately clash with one another. So it just...
Yeah. The first...
It'll be fun.
Yeah. The first 5 minutes are going to be that, right? I think you book the first 5 minutes of this match to be, you know, them each showing each other how self-involved they are.
Yeah.
And then they get into their wrestling and everyone goes, oh, yeah. That's exactly what you're going to hear. Like,
yep.
From the crowd, it's, oh, yeah. It's going to be weird.
A little awkward.
Yeah. Then we had a ladder match for the vacant NXT Tag Team Championships that were vacated by the Viking Raiders, who are completely missing in action. Good for
glad
them.
They got the belts from them before they disappeared.
Right, yeah. Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch versus the Street Profits versus the Undisputed Era versus the Forgotten Sons. I think you can make a case for any of these teams winning the title, right?
Yeah.
Like, Lorcan and Burch are huge fan favorites, and they're incredible workers. The Street Profits are over like Rover, because that gimmick is hot fire. The Undisputed Era is the Undisputed Era, and I really miss Kyle O'Reilly playing air guitar. And then the Forgotten Sons are up and coming, and they're very talented, and I think giving them the belt would add them some legitimacy to kind of push them further, right?
Which is weird when you consider Wesley Blake already is a NXT
right.
tag champion formally.
Right. Who's in a better position?
That was forgotten.
Yes. Uh-huh. Who's in a better position now, Blake or Murphy in the company?
Still Murphy. I mean, yeah. Despite the fact that he's missing.
He's not missing. Isn't he on 205 still? Or they were going to bring him up, right? Or he
no,
was
they brought him up.
He was getting moved to SmackDown. I won't say brought him up, because I hate when other people use that term in reference to 205.
Because it is transitioned him.
Yeah. He was shaken up in the Superstar Shakeup or whatever.
He had like one match and now he gone.
I forgot about that. God. I saw someone looked at the entire talent roster and there are 56 talents in WWE that haven't been on TV in the last 2 weeks, I think it was.
Yeah.
I'm like, why? Why do you have all these people then? But I mean, yet Baron Corbin's still main event in every Raw.
I mean, it's not necessarily a fair thing. Like, 2 weeks is not that long.
No, it's not terrible.
I mean, it used to be like, you know, when you only had, I mean, yeah, you're dealing with 5 hours of wrestling instead of like one or two like you did back in the day. Mm-hmm. But that was more of my thing. Like, you didn't see, like, when we were watching 80s, 90s, like Saturday shows, that type of thing, you didn't see every single wrestler every week. So some guys you didn't see, you know, even every 2 weeks. You saw them like every 3 weeks, every 4 weeks sometimes.
Right.
Because, you know, they weren't top guys necessarily. You'd see Ric Flair every, you know, Saturday night on the Superstation, but you didn't necessarily see Brad Armstrong.
Yeah. Okay. I want to retract that statement I just made, because okay. I read a headline and said it out loud, and then I clicked on the link, and I'm looking at the list. This person's including Aiden English, who does commentary every week, all of the injured people, Aleister Black, Bray Wyatt, Big E, Like, Dolph Ziggler, they've been on TV. He's saying they haven't wrestled, though. Like, I don't know that you need that, right?
You're getting technicalities now.
Yeah. Kalisto, like, big who's on every on week. List. Lince Dorado, who's been on every week, is Lucha House Party. Lars Sullivan. Sonya. Xavier. Yeah, screw that. That's a terrible statistic. Anyway. Shayna Baszler defends the NXT. Go ahead.
I was going to say, but there are people that aren't getting used, but yeah, it's not that extreme.
It's not. Yeah, that made it seem way worse. All right. Sorry about that, folks. Shayna Baszler defends the NXT Women's Championship against Io Shirai. Io Shirai, I don't remember. I can literally never remember.
This every single
whenever
time.
I sit down to do this podcast, I immediately forget. It's EO. I know it's EO.
Is it?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm going to click on it now. Let's see here. Yeah, EO. Got it. Close the card. Sure. It's a match. I'm not that hot for it, I'm going to be honest.
No, because, I think we've gotten to past the point of Shayna where, you know, we're not necessarily expecting a turn, and Io's... I like Io Shirai. I like her a little better than I did Kairi Sane, but...
Agreed. I still just don't care.
Yeah. We need a little something. I don't know what, but...
Yeah, yeah. They've got to figure out a new angle with Shayna and all the women in NXT. Other than, I'm big and strong, and I'm kind of mean. And you're mean, I'm going to take your title. That's been every single one of her feuds. I'm just kind of like, cool. And then in the main event, Johnny Gargano defends the NXT Championship against Adam Cole, baby. It'll be another very good match. I don't know if the title switches hands here. If it does, guarantee that Roddy Strong turn sooner than later.
Yeah.
Because that's the play here. And my thing with that too is I don't know what you'd do with Gargano at that point, right? Obviously you'd have him chase back at least until take over in LA, but that would be it, right?
I would think so. I mean,
Ciampa's nowhere near ready.
No. I mean, it's still that kind of question of, is he ever going to be ready?
Yeah. Yes.
I hope so.
He absolutely will be. He'll be fine. All right. I think that's TakeOver 25, Saturday night.
You're going to watch it. You're going to enjoy it. It's just
It's TakeOver. Yeah, exactly. And then this week on Raw and SmackDown, we get The Undertaker on Monday and Goldberg on Tuesday.
Yep.
Cool. This is where you have that match with no build. It kills me. Like, you couldn't put this match on Mania. You couldn't build it for a month. Oh, that's the stuff that frustrates. Instead of just hot-shotting it because the Prince of Saudi Arabia is like, I want to see this.
Well, it doesn't matter. It honestly doesn't. It doesn't need build.
No.
Who cares? I mean, it's The Undertaker and Goldberg there. That's the story.
But I mean, it feels like that deserves more.
Does it?
Yes. It's The Undertaker and Goldberg.
Exactly. That's the only story you need to tell. I don't give a crap why Goldberg comes back if Undertaker, like, sent him a letter that said, oh, you know, I'm going to take your shirtless kid and kill him or something.
Boyberg.
Yeah.
Sunberg. There we go. Yeah, I don't know. I wanted more than like a one show of them each cutting promos at each other. It just feels like meh. Cool. We're just throwing it out there because it's Goldberg and Undertaker.
It doesn't help that I don't want to see them anymore.
I do. I cannot wait to see this match. Like, it takes me back, man. It's going to be as good, if not greater, than Cody and Dustin. I think Tom just hung up.
I'm not justifying that with a reply.
Okay. Anything else this week in wrestling?
There probably was, but we're running late.
Yeah, this has been a long show. We spent a lot of time on Double or Nothing, but it was worth it. We needed to. So yeah, so next week we'll talk about TakeOver and get ready for Superstar Showdown that I won't be watching because I'll be at work.
I won't be watching because I have morals.
But I'm a journalist. I gotta watch it. I mean, we're in this. So, you know, I'm Dave Meltzer. You know, every impression's good when you have to end it with the name of who it is. All right, Tom, we'll tell the people where they can find you on the internet.
Go on the Twitter machine at Mr. Workrate, at MR Workrate. Don't go anywhere else. Although, check Twitch potentially next week again, as it looks like I might be challenging Mr. Joe Ovius again to some Nintendo 64 wrestling prowess. The rumor is that we most recently played WrestleMania 2000, but by popular request, it looks like
you gotta play No Mercy, right?
No.
Ooh.
WCW NWO Revenge.
Yep, that was my next. That was my next guess. Nice.
So someone's playing as La Parca.
Yeah.
Spoiler.
Check out the check out our Twitter. Tom will put it on there when it happens.
Yeah.
You can find me on the internet at JC Bobbitt, JCBOBBITT, wherever final social media is purveyed. You can find the show on Twitter at CheatersNVRPin. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook too if you like us enough, and go find us there. And then that's it, because we're done. The show has gone on way longer than it should have, as they all do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll catch you next week for another episode of the Cheaters Never Pin podcast. I'm JC.
I'm Tom.
And we'll catch you on the flip side.